Good morning. Hope you're doing well this morning. We are going to finish up our series called Friends in Low Places today. Next week, the plan is actually for the former pastor at Liberty to come down and preach here at our church along with her husband. He'll be helping us lead worship. We're doing this for a number of reasons. Number one, the Wesleyan Church is encouraging women preachers in all pulpits during the month of September, not necessarily every Sunday in September, but at least one. We're going to have two Sundays in September where we're going to have a woman preaching. Emily will preach next week, and then Elizabeth will be giving her first sermon towards the end of September. So next week, I invited her down to preach and for her husband to help lead worship. I hope that some of the Liberty folks will come down so that you can begin meeting them, building relationships with them. We also want to show them how we do church here because we're hoping Liberty is going to be somewhat similar. So we're looking forward to that next week. And so this week, we're going to finish up the series on friendships, and I'm going to talk about how to be a good friend today. But before I get into that, let me tell you a story. And it might sound familiar to you. Parts of it might sound familiar to you, and if it don't, then you're not paying attention. So there was this church that was remodeling another church. And there was a pastor that had noticed at the end of the road at that church, there was a old sign that needed to be taken down. It was the church's sign. It was on a highway called Highway 49. And so when the assistant pastor got there, the pastor said, "Hey, can we go up the road and take up the sign or figure out how to get this sign down because it doesn't look good?" And so the assistant pastor said, "Yeah." By the way, the end of the story, the assistant pastor's the bad friend here. And I'm the good friend. The pastor's a good friend. So they drove to the end of the road to look at the sign, and it's a ugly looking sign. It's been hit. It's just in a mess. And so they thought maybe they'd be able to screw off the sign, take it down, be good. Well, that didn't work. So here they are on Highway 49, shaking the sign back and forth. Meanwhile, it's basically in someone's front yard. There's a dog barking because it looks like these people are trying to take down a sign. We are trying to take down a sign. I mean, they were trying to take down the sign. Shaking that sign like crazy, getting it to budge a little bit. Eventually, they pull it up, and the pastor says to the assistant pastor, "Can we put it in your vehicle?" And he says, "Yes." And so we open up the vehicle. The sign's longer than what the pastor envisioned. And so the pastor said, "I'll just carry it down the road." Like a good friend, the pastor said, "I'll carry it down the road. I don't want to get your car dirty." You know, just being a good friend. So here goes the pastor, and I'll just show you what this looks like. It's that type of sign right there. Here goes the pastor down the road. Look like I'm picketing. I'm protesting something. With this thrown over my shoulder, walking down the road, and I said, people think I'm stealing a sign, and the cops are going to pull up. How am I going to explain this? And in our wallets, the Wesleyan Church gives us a little thing that tells you you're a pastor, so I was prepared to show them, hey, I'm authorized to do this. So I'm going down the road, and all of a sudden I hear that, I was like, these neighbors, I said, I hope no one's watching. All of a sudden I hear this voice, "Hello." I'm like, great. I couldn't see the woman, but she was on her front porch, and the porch was covered in plants. And so I said, "Hey, how are you?" And I'm like, I got to say something just to make her think I'm not some criminal. So I said, "Your plants look great. I love all your plants." And I just kept walking. And so eventually I made it back to the church, didn't get caught by the cops. But I was a good friend in that scenario, and Pastor Bernard was a bad friend in that scenario, as he allowed me to embarrass myself walking down the road with this over my shoulder. No, Pastor Bernard's a good friend. I warned him beforehand that I'd be telling this story, and he apologized. So you can give him a hard time on that. But I didn't want, it had mud all down in the bottom. I didn't want to get that in his vehicle. So I tried to be a good friend in that case, but I looked like an idiot. I looked like a criminal is what I looked like. My first point for you, though, is this. We've been talking about finding friends, finding good friends. But the truth is, and we kind of hit on this last week, good friends attract good friends. If you want to be a good friend, if you want to have good friends, be a good friend. I believe friendships put back what you put into it. Any good friendship. If the other person is of any type of character, they are going to reciprocate what you put in. So if you are a good friend, they're probably going to be a good friend to you. I think we all want to have good friends. So let's talk about how to be good friends. We're going to look at Jesus once again because he's our perfect example. And we've already said he's the perfect friend. And that's how we're going to end again today. Jesus is our perfect friend. So I got five things for you that good friends do for their friends. First is that they build trust. They build trust. Trust is the foundation for any relationship. Think about a marriage, any type of marital relationship, it is built on the foundation of trust. And often when that foundation begins to crumble, the marriage begins to crumble. Even professional relationships, I thought about this, at your job, that relationship is built on trust. You trust that your employer is going to pay you for ever how many hours you work, and they trust that you are going to do the job. And when that trust is broken, normally that relationship is broken. It's no different in friendships. A friendship is not going to last long if there is no trust, because trust is what the foundation is built upon. No one that I know wants to be friends with someone that you can't trust. And I think a lot of people don't want to be friends with people who don't trust you. Because if they don't trust you and you don't trust them, they're not going to tell you anything. You're not going to tell them anything because you don't want things told in the church or in other circles. And going back to the filio type of love, which is a love where you enjoy each other's presence, you're not going to enjoy their presence if there is no trust. I think it's interesting when you look at Jesus and his story with the disciples. At the very foundation, you see Jesus building trust. So we're going to go to Luke chapter 5 for this point, verses 4 through 6. And this is when Jesus first calls Peter and the disciples. It says, when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon Peter, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. But because you say so, I will let down the nets." And when they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. Jesus spoke something. He said, "Hey, I want you to do this. Put your nets down, see what you catch." And Peter's like, "Hey, we haven't caught anything. But I'm going to do it because you said so." And because they did what Jesus told them to do, they caught a large number of fish. And so what does that do? That teaches them that they can trust his word. That they can trust this man that has come and is calling them to follow him. They can trust because they saw the results. I also think Jesus built trust with the disciples with every miracle he performed. They trusted that he really was the Son of God, that he had this power from God. And then I know for sure that he built trust by simply building relationships with his disciples. He was their friends. He built relationships with them, and they could trust his character. He did that by building it on the foundation of trust. So we can build trust by a few ways. First, by keeping our word. When we say we're going to do something, then do it. If you say you're going to call someone or you're going to meet someone for lunch or whatever it may be, do it. I have moved on from friendships before they even got started because I saw that people could not keep their word. If they can't keep their word, they're probably not going to keep the rest of it. Second way that we build trust is by not gossiping. Pretty simple. Don't gossip. Here's what Proverbs 16:28 says. A perverse person stirs up conflict, and a gossip separates close friends. Gossip will separate close friends. Gossip basically means someone tells you something secret, someone tells you something that you don't want told, and they go and they spread it all over. And this is really bad, not necessarily in our church, but this is really bad in the church in general. There have been churches that have split and closed because of gossip. Because of people going around telling things that should never be told in public. People need someone, though, that they can be completely honest and open with, and that they know it's going to stay right there and go no further. We need people that we can be honest with, that we can trust with our deepest, darkest secrets, so that we can confess our sins to one another, so that we can confess what's going on in our life. And you can be that good friend by simply not spreading their business everywhere for everyone to hear. And the third way to build trust, and this is what I really was thinking when I made this point, is you can build trust by simply being open. There's one thing that I've learned and I've tried to teach other people, that the more open you are with someone that you view as a potential friend, the more open they will be with you. So if you tell them some of your secrets, chances are they're going to tell you some of their secrets. And the reason why that builds trust is because you're basically giving dirt on each other. If I give you dirt and you give me dirt, then if you tell my dirt, I might tell your dirt. You know? So it builds this trust that you have to trust the other person. And if you show that you do trust the other person, they're going to trust you. They're going to know that they can be open and honest with you. They can be open about their dirt, per se. But also, I've learned that one way to build trust is just to be open about how you're currently feeling. Invite people into your struggles. If they are a good friend or if they're a potential good friend, they are going to want to help you. At the very least, it will build trust by showing them your struggles, showing them what everyone else doesn't get to see. I've seen this happen time and time again in friendships where that trust was built because we trusted one another. And for me, personally, in a lot of my friendships, if I knew that if I was open with them, they were going to be more open with me. I even try to do that here as a pastor when I preach. I try to be open with you about my struggles from the stage, because I believe that if I'm open with you about what I'm struggling with, you're going to be more open with me about what you're struggling with. I think if we just show each other our highlight reels, we'll never get to know the other person, because none of us are on the mountain all the time. None of us are perfect. And so if I can be open and honest with you about my struggles, my prayer, my hope, is that you can be open and honest with me about yours. And I hope that you will not use my struggles against me, just like I'm not going to use your struggles against you. We're building trust with one another. That's the foundation of any friendship. Second thing a good friend does is they care. How to be a good friend? Simply care. To care means to show concern or interest in someone or something. A good friend is going to be concerned about the well-being of their friend's life, and they're going to show interest in it. Jesus obviously cared about the lives of his disciples. And what's interesting, in Luke chapter 4, we see that Jesus' care for his disciples went beyond just caring for them as a person, but caring for their whole family. A lot of people don't realize that Simon Peter was actually married. And so in Luke chapter 4, this is before Jesus calls them on with the fishing episode. In Luke chapter 4, verses 38 through 39, we're told Jesus left the synagogue and he went to the home of Simon. Now Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked Jesus to help her. And Jesus, he cares so much about Simon that he bent over her, he rebuked the fever and it left her, and she got up at once and began to wait on them. Just like a woman, willing to serve and help, however. That's a good mother-in-law right there. Jesus cared enough about Peter. Now, he took care of Peter's mother-in-law. Because I think Jesus knew that if Peter's mother-in-law wasn't good, Peter wasn't going to be at his best to do the ministry work that Jesus was calling him to do. And so Jesus, he cared enough for his disciples that he was willing to help their family, their extended family. And then, of course, we know the end of the story. Jesus cared about his disciples enough that he died on the cross for their sins. He came back and he restarted a friendship with them. And now he is their friends for the rest of eternity. He did that because he cares. To care means you take an investment in their life. When I think about caring for my friends, I think about how I try to enter into their life and show concern or interest in it. When you take an investment out in something, like let's just say a house, you aren't just going to let the house go to ruin, are you? Because if you let it go to ruin, your investment goes downhill. Now, here in Randolph County, if you kept your house up to any measure, your investment in your house, if you purchased it before, like last year or year before, went up. Our house went from roughly $112,000 to almost $220,000 tax worth just in 6 years. Now, we remodeled the outside. We tried to take care of it. And from what I've been told, we could sell it for even more than that, even though we're not looking at selling. But the investment that you make in something, you're going to try to take care of it. A lot of your vehicles is an investment. If you're anybody other than Randy, you're going to try to take care of your vehicles. You're going to try to take care of your investment. Same thing with friendships. If you are investing in the other person, you're going to try to take care of that investment. If you are entering into the life of the other person, you're going to try to make sure that your friend's life is taken care of. But now, as is often with God, God doesn't tell us to just stop with caring. He always goes this next level, and he calls his people to be next level different. He tells us in Galatians 6:2, this is how much you should care for your friend. It says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of Christ. He says, don't just show concern. Don't just say, hey, I'm sorry you're going through that. I'm concerned. I'm interested in your life, but I'm sorry. But I ain't going to do nothing else. Said in Galatians 6:2, God is calling us to go to this next level of caring where we actually carry. I don't know if that's the root word of carry. I don't know. But he's calling us to actually carry each other's burdens. To be there for one another, to completely enter into their life and take what burdens you can off of them onto your shoulders. Unfortunately, over the last 3 years, Sarah and I have been through some bad times. We had a miscarriage a couple years ago. We just lost my father-in-law. And I'm so thankful for the friends that have stepped up during that time to help carry some of our burdens. I'm so thankful for the way all of you stepped up. I've missed 2 straight summer giveaways. Our leaders stepped up to lead it. You guys stepped up to work at it. That's a burden that I didn't have to worry about. That's a burden that I was able to use that you took off of my shoulders so that I could focus on being there for my child a year ago and being there for my family this past summer giveaway. Same thing with the miscarriage. People brought us food. People tried to do what they could just to take some burdens off of our shoulders. Could they take away the problem? No. But they took away the burdens, other burdens in our life, so that we could grieve and so that we could go through the process that we were going through. That's a good friend. That's a friend that truly cares because they stepped in to carry those burdens. Try to be that type of friend. Care so much about your friends that you will step in and carry the burdens. Don't just give lip service and say, I'm sorry you're going through that. Man, I feel for you. Actually step in and do what you can to make a difference. Third thing a good friend does is they encourage. They encourage. To encourage means to give confidence, to give hope or support to someone. You make them believe in themselves and in God's power to work through them. This is not something you just do when they are down, by the way. I think often we only focus on encouraging when we feel like the person needs to be encouraged. But the truth is that people need encouragement daily. Even back during biblical times, Hebrews 3:13, the instruction was to encourage one another daily. The author of Hebrews says, as long as it's called today, basically encourage one another, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. The author of Hebrews connects encouragement to falling for sin. That's an interesting connection to make, but I can see why that is. There's a connection there, because if you begin to feel really bad about yourself, you're more susceptible to sin. When you begin to lose confidence in your ability and God's power at work in you and God working in your life and your purpose in life, it's easy to fall into sin's trap. It's been said before that positive words are difficult to remember and negative words are difficult to forget. Plenty of people in this room, probably all of us, we can remember the negative words easier than the positive words. I'm thankful for the encouragement I've received from you guys as a pastor, but the words that stick with me are the negative ones. It's probably the same for a lot of you. Maybe your parents were negative to you, or maybe a boss at work, or whatever it may be, a spouse. A lot of you have had a lot of negative things said to you, and it's hard for you to forget them. A good friend can be encouraging to try to offset those negative words. Jesus, after he picks the 12 disciples, I didn't make this connection until doing this study. In the Gospel of Luke, he picked the disciples in Luke 5, and then in Luke 6, he actually picks which 12 he is choosing to really invest in. And so in Luke chapter 6, 20 through 22, this is the next part, he looked at his disciples. And he said, blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. It's interesting to me that he is just picked his disciples and then he gives them what we call the Beatitudes. These are the encouraging words. He basically says, are you poor? Are you hungry? Are you weeping? Are you hated? I've got good news for you. The kingdom of God is yours. I've got good news for you. Your hunger is going to be satisfied. I got good news for you. If you weep, you're going to laugh. I've got good news for you that if you are hated, you're going to be blessed. Those are encouraging words that Jesus gives to his disciples. That is good news. Another episode that we've looked at a little bit and we're going to look at again today, Jesus, he's talking to Peter and he's warning Peter what is about to come. He says, Simon, in Luke 22, 31 through 32, he says, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you all as wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. He tells Peter, hey, Satan's asked to attack you. Satan's asked to take you down, but I want you to know, this is encouragement here, I'm prayed for you. I prayed that your faith may not fail. And then what's really encouraging is that the Son of God, who knows the beginning from the end, who sees the future, he says, when you have turned back, not if you turn back, he is speaking confidence. He is showing confidence in Peter. He is injecting confidence into Peter. He's injecting strength into Peter and saying, when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. There was a warning there, but that warning was followed up with encouragement. And of course, the episode we looked at last week, after Jesus died, and he goes back and he asks Peter, after he's been resurrected, he asks Peter, do you love me? And each time Peter says, yes, I love you. And Jesus kept giving him commands, then feed my sheep, feed my lambs, take care of my people. That was encouragement. That was Jesus encouraging him to do what God has called him to do. Jesus was an encourager. And we should aim to be as well. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, encourage one another and build each other up, just as in fact you are doing. I think it's interesting here that Paul connects encouragement and building together. Encouragement means you're building the other person up. And don't you know, we have enough people trying to tear us down. It'd be nice to have some people that would build us up. It'd be nice to have some friends that build each other up. That is what friends are for. If you're both trying to build one another up, you're only going to make each other better. If you're trying to out-encourage your friend, that is going to be one great friendship. Because you're constantly just adding to the other one's life. You're constantly just building them up to become who God has called them to be. Some of the best friendships I've had is the ones where we are trying to out-encourage the other one. It means so much to me to have encouraging words from a friend. A lot of times those encouraging words even outweigh Sarah's words. Sarah has to say good things to me. I'm her husband. The friend does not have to. They don't have to live with me and live the consequences if they don't say something encouraging to me. So I trust. I trust what my friends say when they speak in my life. And this is going to lead into this next point a little bit. The fourth way to be a good friend is to show true love. And specifically here I said true love because I'm not talking about this fluffy love of everything goes and everything is okay. I'm not talking about this love where it's just like, hey, good for you, even if they're doing something that's ridiculously bad. This is the love that is not only focused on maintaining the friendship, but it's the love that maintains the friendship and makes each other better. Going back to the first week, we covered four different types of people you come across. There's people who subtract in your life. They drain you. There's people who divide in your life. They try to take you down. There's people who add to your life. They add joy to your life. And then we talked about the most rare of them all is the people who multiply in your life. They don't only make your life better. They make you better. How do they make you better? They show you true love. You can show this fluffy type of love and make someone else's life better by agreeing with everything they do. But do we really want someone that's going to agree with me if I'm doing something that's hurting me? Do we really want to be friends with someone that agrees with me when I could be doing something that is going to lead me straight to hell? No. I want to be friends with people who are going to show me this true love. And anytime I talk about true love, I always talk about how it's built on two things. Truth. Truth means you are willing to tell your friend the truth even when they are in the wrong. You're even willing to hurt them a little bit. It's going to sting a little bit when you tell them the truth, but you're telling them the truth not just to make their life better, but to make them a better follower of God. The other side of true love, though, is grace. Grace is undeserved goodness. It basically means you're good to them no matter what. It basically means you ultimately want what is best for them in their life. That you love them through thick and thin. Jesus showed this love perfectly at all times. He was the embodiment of this type of love. He showed his disciples this type of love constantly. One of the best examples of Jesus showing this type of love was in the story that we already looked at. When Jesus told Peter that Peter was going to disown him three times, that was the truth. He was showing him love, though, by praying for him. He was showing him love by telling him the truth. He was preparing Peter. But then he showed him grace, talking about when he would turn back, because Jesus knew he would. And he was going to welcome Peter back into his life. He was going to welcome Peter back as a friend. He showed him truth. Hey, this is what's going to happen, even though it stung, even though it hurt Peter. But he also showed him grace by being there when he was resurrected, by befriending Peter once again. Jesus constantly taught the disciples truth, but he showed them grace when they messed up because they messed up a lot. That's what a true friend does. So if you want to be a good friend, be willing to speak the hard truth into your friend's lives. tell them what they may not want to hear. When they are wrong, tell them they are in the wrong. If they have some type of sin in their life, call it out. But don't do it to shame them. Don't do it to make yourself better. Do it out of love. Here's what Proverbs says. Proverbs 27:5. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Proverbs 27:6. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. A wound from a friend, huh? That means that they might be being truthful with you, and it might hurt a little bit, but it can be trusted. They really are a friend. What you better watch out for is the enemies who tell you that you're the best that they've ever seen. Proverbs 19:20 says, listen to advice and accept discipline, and at the end you will be counted among the wise. Listen to your friend's advice. If they really love you, they're going to tell you the truth. But they're also going to show grace. Try to show grace to other people. We talked about unforgiveness being a friendship killer last week. Well, this is where the unforgiveness or forgiveness comes in. If you're going to show grace, it means you're going to have to forgive when they mess up, because they are going to mess up. Show patience with them as they grow. We don't automatically become all that God has called us to be overnight. It takes time. So show patience with them as they try to grow in their faith and as they try to grow to become a better friend. And ultimately, though, at the core of it, always want what is good for them. I've had friendships that showed me both this true love and this fluffy type of love. The ones that showed me this true love, they'll speak the truth into my life, and I so appreciate it. Does it hurt sometimes? Yes. But it builds this relationship deeper. And they also show me grace, though. They don't get frustrated with me. They show patience with me. And they love me through everything. I've also had friendships, though, where it stayed on the surface level because of this fluffy type of love. I've had friendships where I could not speak the truth into their life without fear of them yelling back at me or getting angry. And it really stopped that friendship from going to the next level. It remained on a surface level. Try to be a friend that can speak truth into a friend's life, but also show them grace. That's true love. And the last way to be a good friend is to sacrifice. In fact, sacrifice kind of runs underneath the surface of all these others. Jesus obviously sacrificed daily for his disciples, and he asked them to do the same for him. Luke 9:23 said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. He says, deny yourself, take up your cross, not just one time, daily. That means that you are willing to sacrifice. Jesus, think about how much time he spent investing in his friends, investing in his disciples. He sacrificed his time. He sacrificed his energy. I think there's many times where he sacrificed his wants and desires for theirs. Why? Because he was their friend. If you want to be a good friend, you need to do the same. We need to be willing to sacrifice our time and energy in order to invest in the life of our friends. We need to sacrifice our wants and our desires for theirs. We need to constantly try to out-sacrifice one another. And if you do, that goes back to the encouragement piece. You're only building each other up more. Talking about each one of these, sacrifice runs underneath these other four. So to build trust, you're sacrificing the wall that you put up that you don't let everybody else see. You're sacrificing that wall by giving them some foundation for trust to be built. You're trusting them with whatever dirt you are willing to share. To care for someone, to carry their burdens, guess what that's going to require? Sacrificing your time and energy. That's going to require you sacrificing maybe your wants and desires. Maybe you want to stay home, but your friend needs food. Maybe you want to stay home, but your friend could use a phone call. Maybe you want to watch TV, but your friend could use you reaching out to see how they are that day. Sacrifice. Encouragement means that you're willing to sacrifice time to encourage the other person. And then going back to the showing true love, I think sometimes you got to be willing to sacrifice the friendship to ultimately be a good friend. You got to be willing to lose the friendship if they don't respond well in order to be a friend that multiplies in their life. And if the friendship ends up ending because you're showing them true love, then you probably shouldn't have been friends with them anyway. Requires sacrifice. Sacrifice is a choice that we all have to make. And when you look at Jesus, he made that choice. Ultimately, he sacrificed his life for his friends. John 15, 13 through 14, Jesus said, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." Once again, God is calling us to this next level of sacrifice, to be willing to go, not just sacrifice our wants and desires, but to sacrifice literally our lives for our friends. And then he tells the disciples, "You are my friends if you do what I command." In other words, he says, "I'm willing to sacrifice my life for you." And the cool thing is, that statement right there, "You are my friends if you do what I command," and that whole to lay down one's life for one's friends, he's speaking that to you today. He said, "I showed you the greatest love I could ever show you. I laid down my life for you. And you are my friends if you do what I command." The theme of this series, yes, we've been talking about friendships, but one of the underlying themes is that Jesus is the best friend we could ever have. For those of us that are Christians, what I mean by that is those of us who are friends with Jesus. Can you look back in your life and see that Jesus did every bit of this with you? Did he build trust with you? Has he come through for you time and time again? Has he handled things for you when you couldn't handle them yourself? Has he cared for you like only he can? Has he encouraged you when you needed that encouragement, both in the good times and the bad times? Has he truly loved you by speaking truth into your life and showing grace? And I can answer the last one. Did he sacrifice for you? Yes, he did. He sacrificed his life for each and every one of us so that we can call him friend. If you want to be the best friend that you can possibly be, you need to know the best friend that you can possibly have. And his name is Jesus. Amen? Go and stand to your feet and worship team can come on up. We're going to end today the same way we ended the first week of this series, by singing what a friend we have in Jesus. Because he is the best friend you can have. And I believe that if you accept him as your friend, I didn't realize they were moving all this. If you accept him as your friend, he's going to make you a better friend. He's going to make you a good friend to those that are in your life. And it's going to, I hope that people reciprocate that and they will be a good friend to you, because you know we all need it. So let's pray and prepare to worship. Lord,